Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality sector. I'm in London today at Canary Wharf and I've got three esteemed gentlemen for our industry in the UK who I know really quite well. We've got Simon Lilly from Specify UK, Matt Greep from HCE Catering Equipment down in Southampton, and Malcolm Harling from Williams Refrigeration. So in this episode, we're going to be discussing around design technology, the software that backs up our industry, equipment installation, refrigeration. We're obviously going to talk about kitchens and the industry, and we're going to delve a little bit more into these three gentlemen's careers and lives. So welcome all three of you. How are you?
Very good.
Good morning. Good. Yeah, very well.
Good. We're all here on time, so
we're excited.
That's a bonus. Simon, thank you for sponsoring the podcast and welcome to the show. It's your first time.
It is. Yeah, looking forward to this. It's an interesting thing to be part of. So thank you for the invitation.
Great. No problem. Thank you. So just for the listeners, tell us a little bit about where you grew up. I know you're a Scouser.
Yes, I grew up in Liverpool, where I spent the first 17, 18 years of my life. Went to school with other people that are already within the industry. But then I moved to Manchester, where I kind of developed my career, started my career in the path of food service. And then, I guess 11 years ago, I moved down to the southwest, living not far from Glastonbury, where we've now got a 13-year-old who's in school there and well settled in.
And a very beautiful view, because we had a Teams call a couple of weeks ago and discussed this very podcast, and you can literally see Glastonbury.
Yeah, I've got festival. A view of Glastonbury tour out of my office window. And when the festival is on, you know, we are about 2 or 3 miles away from the festival site. So right. Luckily.
Well, we're all kind of waiting for the tickets.
Yeah, we
get full
that,
weekend
yeah.
tickets, which is great. And I've got a list as long as my leg of people asking me for free tickets. So, yeah, you can join the queue, gents.
Oh, damn. So when you were 16, what did you want to do? I mean, what was the... Did you have a plan?
Not really. And I still don't really have a plan. Like a lot of people that enter into the food service. But I guess what I wanted to do was, and it's going to sound get a bit corny, is I always wanted to be a racing driver.
Right, okay.
Anything to do with a motor, two wheels, four wheels, but anything with a motor, whether that's on the water, on the land. So yeah, really into motor racing, but never really got to the point where it was ever going to be a profession. So something that's more of a hobby. So yeah.
When did you get into like food service equipment, if you like?
So food service equipment, I started working for Costa in the late 90s up in Manchester on Piccadilly Station, behind the counter, creating, making coffee for people, and kind of quickly moved through their management program to the point where I was managing a cluster of stores in the city of Manchester. Then I moved on to the new store openings teams, where I was kind of traveling around the country, setting standards for the new commercial stores that they had. Then I was approached to move on to the wholesale side of the business, running out of their roastery in Lambeth, where we were, the team and I that I worked with were going around the country, setting the brand standards as to how to produce Costa coffee from a restaurant, an independent hotel, however it might be, to the point where we were actually writing the methodology of how Costa was going to be producing their coffee within their stores. Then I moved on to the sales team, going around selling the coffee, selling the brand, the equipment. And after seven,
they sort of moved into like vending and things like that. And
this was before the vending time and before the franchise business took model. We were a wholesale business working alongside the retail business. I did that for 7, 8, 9 years with Costa. Then I was made redundant. And my world collapsed in upon itself. I was in my mid-20s, late-20s. I'd been doing this job since I was in my early-20s. It was kind of like a family. We all knew each other for a long time. And then as a division, the wholesale division got closed down to a greater extent and turned into a franchise model. So they made a lot of people redundant. I then came home from my consultation and said to my then fiance Charlie, you know, they've made me redundant. And she was like, fantastic, let's go traveling. So she quit her job and we went around the world for 6, 8 months or so. Ended up getting married as we were traveling. Got married over in Las Vegas, which was a bit unusual. But we had planned to get married in a castle in North Wales, which obviously, you know, redundancy put way to that. And then, yeah, we thought we'll just get married.
We had more time we'd get into that Vegas wedding, but maybe we'll save that one
next time.
A drunken moment in the bar.
So got back from traveling and I needed to get a job. So I interviewed with Hobart, as it was, for the cooking division with Paul Godfrey. Then I had my kind of final interview with Steve Martin, which was an honor to work for Steve back in the day. Steve was a great guy. And I worked with Hobart for about 4 years or so, four and a half years.
And so now, obviously, you're with Specify. How long have you been?
So Specify, coming up to 2.5 years with Specify now. So okay. It's a real change in my career from selling catering equipment to actually selling a software package that then sits behind the industry and kind of drives the industry forward.
And we're going to come on to that in a moment, mm-hmm. get in a bit more detail about that. Just, is there any, like, one funny career moment you've had what's been like in our sector, the food service equipment? I mean, there are probably quite a few.
There's a lot that we probably can't talk about because I think most people have these scenarios. But I guess one that springs to mind is when I was working for Electrolux. I was doing some training at the Met Police in central London on a grill that had been placed and positioned underneath, which I hadn't noticed at the time, a fire alarm, a smoke detector. And these machines give off smoke and steam. And, you know, ultimately we ended up setting off the alarms, the fire alarms, right the way across the Met Police.
Emptying the building.
Almost emptying the building. Oh, the fire brigades were on the way. I was able to find the estates manager and say, you know, listen, it was me, it was this one. So, you know, evacuation was averted, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah, would have been quite embarrassing.
But, yeah, I can remember walking out, phoning my colleagues and, Jesus, just set the alarms off. but, yeah.
Okay, well, Simon, thank you for that. I'm going to go on chat to Matt, and then we're going to come back to you and talk about your quite professional work, really, like what you're doing at Specify. So, Matt, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you.
Your first time on the podcast, I think.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
But we had HCE on, your colleague on.
Steve Holly.
Steve Holly, yeah, which was actually episode one of season one, so the very first ever episode, which is still the biggest listened to episode of which John Benson Smith likes to remind me of on a weekly basis.
Steve will remind me as well.
So, but anyway, I'm glad we finally got you on the show.
Yeah, no, I've been looking forward to it.
So, but you're kind of like born into the industry, are you not? Am I glad to say that?
Or? Well, yeah, I was, yeah, definitely dragged into the industry for sure. I didn't think I had much choice with it, to be honest. So when I started, I didn't know this industry existed. You know, I literally came straight from school, being a family business, and have never looked back.
Okay. So where was it? Down in Southampton?
So born and bred in Southampton. Always been there my whole life. Recently moved to the New Forest between Bournemouth and Southampton, but still very, very close, only about 20 minutes away. But it was good growing up, actually, in Southampton, because it's a big sort of university town, and back then, sort of 15, 16 years ago, it was good nightlife. So I was always around the bars and had a good understanding and concept of bar design. So.
And what was going on, of course. Although those days are probably gone now, because you're a reasonably new father, aren't you?
Yes.
So congratulations for that.
Well, that's probably lack a year. Of sleep.
How long ago is it?
9 months, now. So lack of sleep, but it's still just as fun in different ways.
Yeah. So was your first job actually in food service equipment, or did you...
So my first job was actually a waiter for a wedding venue.
Oh, okay.
So it was quite local in Romsey. And I would, you know, start out just being the KP, basically, and then sort of worked myself up to being sort of waiting front of house. But my worst story on that was where we had a wedding and we were doing all the welcoming drinks. Mm-hmm. And I was holding all the champagne. And the bride come in and she took one of the glasses, and with that, the rest of the tray fell back onto me. And it must have been about 50, 60 glasses. All come back onto me, all dressed in black. It was a hot summer's day, and that was it. You know, wasps around me for the rest of the day. Bit of a nightmare, but it was a good learning experience.
Did you just get laughed off?
They were very good with it. They thought it was a bit of like entertainment on their side, so it worked out.
Typical British humour, laugh in the face of adversity.
Glasses smashing.
So, you know, obviously, at that point, had your father bought HCE then, or no? That wasn't even in the.
No, it wasn't in the. In alignment at that point. Okay. So, when my dad bought HCE, I was still at school, but I was probably just leaving school. So, I was around 15, 16 at the time.
Yeah.
And then, he wanted me to get a job. Started looking at some other jobs he wasn't a big fan of, and then he decided to take control and drag me in and sort of started from
it's
the bottom.
Family business.
And
you did start from the bottom, I know that.
But very much so. I literally, the broom, sweeping the warehouse floor, painting the warehouse floor, moving boxes into bays, and then gradually went through a sort of engineering program, moving boxes into installation sites on site, then went through service, you know, pretty much doing call handling, warranty calls, then went into estimating, putting our quotes together, which gave me a great understanding in terms of who the manufacturers are, developing relationships, then moved into project management, which was a hard learning experience for sure. It was very different to something I've ever done, but it made me learn very, very quickly, which was, when I look back, is a real benefit. I was in there 5 years, ended up looking after the project management team, and then 3 years ago, moved into the sales team, and now a commercial director responsible for the sales side of the business.
Yeah, so really a ground up.
Yeah, a real round robin, yeah.
Yeah. Compared to most people in the industry that fall into it, I'd say you're almost born and bred for it.
Born and bred, day and night. There's no
true professional.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Is there any kind of funny, I mean, there's a lot of funny career moments, and that you can share with us?
I think in terms of our sector, what we do now, I think one, which again was a good learning experience for me, was when I was on the engineering side, pretty much as an engineer's mate, I was, you know, picking up the tools, moving them to where they need them, getting the parts from the van, you know, running back and forth. One of our senior engineers now, who's still with us, and he's been with us for 30 years, he left his toolbox open and asked me to pick it up. And when I picked it up, all his drill bits would come out, all the nails, the washers, you name it. And it went all over this brand new kitchen. And again, he just made me pick it up and put everything back into place. Yeah. But again,
another embarrassing.
It was in front of the client, in front of M&E teams, in front of, you know, engineers. But it was good. It was a good lesson. You know, make sure it's locked before you pick it up.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, Matt, good to see you again. I'm going to come back to you as well, and we'll just discuss about your professional career, and then obviously we have a wider group discussion about specifiers. Well, that's what we're here for today. I'm going to come on to Malcolm Harling. Welcome to the show. It's not your first time.
No, it is.
You were on season one, episode 6. It's 2 years ago now.
Indeed. Almost. In Scotland. In Bonnie, Scotland.
In Bonnie, Scotland. God, it feels like yesterday.
Indeed it does.
How are you anyway?
Very well, thank you. Very good. Glad to be here.
So I know on that podcast we discussed a bit about your sort of career, mainly around your career and obviously how do you work with Lawrence, I think, as well. But maybe we just talk a little bit about where you grew up and, you know, that younger years, school, and then jumping forward to your current role at Williams.
Well, I was born and raised in Dartford in Kent. Oh, everyone knows Dartford because of the bridge.
It
refers to the bridge over the Thames. So, not too far from there. And I had a very good upbringing in a kind of sort of tough town, really. Mm. And that was from up to the age of about 16. And from then on, then I kind of entered the world of food service. And whilst I gave an overview on the previous podcast, I can be a bit more generic this time.
Yeah.
In so much as I left school and I had no idea what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll be a lorry driver. And then I rather liked surfing and windsurfing. And that's, I thought, if I can get a job that's down by the beach, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, no, I'll be a chef. There was loads of hotels by the beach. Mm. I'll learn to be a chef. So that's how it started. And I managed to get on a course at Thanet Tech in Broadstairs, in Kent, and learned to be a chef. And whilst there, I did a few sort of part-time jobs, and which gave me an inkling into the world of hospitality. And I've had a career that has taken me kind of all over the world. It gave me the opportunity to sample different cuisines. I'm now working in the equipment side. But from the early years, I was fortunate. I got a job on a cruise liner on the old P&O Oriana. And that was a college job. So I was a steward. That took me around a lot around the Mediterranean and over to the States. That was huge. That was huge fun. No. And also I did work in the Royal Household as well. So I had a period where I was one of the spare employees in terms of they got the full-time staff, but whenever there's an event like a state banquet or whatever, then They bring in
whereabouts in
the
London
extras.
Or in
yeah, in Buckingham Palace and Windsor Castle.
Wow. Did you only meet the royals?
So yes, indeed.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a privilege that must have been.
It was for a young man of 18.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the time,
did you meet the late Queen?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And so I did a lot of events there, and then when I qualified as a chef, then that took me off around the world. So I had jobs in Australia and New Zealand.
Wow. So you've really quite a varied career. How long have you been with Williams now?
I've been with Williams now for 26 years.
And that's the AFE group?
Yes. I did work for Falcon beforehand.
Okay.
But from the kind of working from the chefing side, then I moved to the equipment side.
Yeah.
And that was, I suppose when you move to the equipment side, you understand what chefs want.
Yes.
And the pressure that goes in working in a kitchen and delivering to deadlines, etc. So having that understanding gave me the opportunity to talk about sort of solutions. And, you know, when I was with Falcon, that's on the cooking side, now I'm on the refrigeration side.
Yeah.
And have been, as I say, for 26 years. And I've loved every minute of it. Every day is different.
Definitely. I mean, and 18 months ago or so, you won the Lifetime Achievement Award for the FEA conference. I was there.
Yes.
That was quite an emotional time, Lee, because did you know that that was coming at all?
No, I didn't know. It was a complete surprise, and to have my family there as well, and I have no idea they were going to be there.
Yeah.
Was something
you could see that. It was like they were obviously terrific. Waiting in the wings, and they came out, and yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, huge honour to get that in our industry, I think.
Yes, it is. It's a big honour, and one I shall never forget. That evening was so special for me and also my family.
Definitely. Mm. Well, Malcolm, thank you for that. I'm going to jump back. We're going to just talk, I'd say, about everyone's professional lives, and then we're going to get on to this group discussion. We'll take a short break, and then we'll come back to it. So Simon, specify, you know, for everybody, what is it? Because we know it, but other people might not know what it is.
Okay, so in short, specify is a fully connected ecosystem of sales enablement tools for the food service industry.
Okay.
Great soundbite, but what does that actually mean? We're a full ecosystem because we have numerous different products that have been designed to simplify the sales process within the food service industry from a manufacturer's perspective, but also from a dealer's perspective. We're about connecting the industry. Manufacturers want to get as much data as they can to the people that are selling it, which is the distributors. The distributors need that data to then be able to give it to the marketplace for them to be able to make their decisions as to what kind of equipment they're going to put into their kitchens. So we've connected that world together. So we work with a manufacturer, for example, Williams. We take all of their data. We hold it in our cloud storage, which is called an e-catalog. That e-catalog then powers the rest of the products that we have within the ecosystem. So we have the quoting platform where a dealer can then quote all the different manufacturers, ring fence it into different areas of a kitchen, create a cook line area, a goods in area, a dishwash area, and then have a fully costed, marginalized quotation that they can then tailored so it looks like it's coming from them with all of their branding that then sits behind it. It's fully customizable. So it's, even though we are a quoting platform, the dealer can then take their quote and fully customize it to their customer. They can introduce their customer's branding if they needed to. They can have multiple different templates. So like I say, it's a quote platform, but the output of it is fully customizable. We then also have a design platform that plugs into Revit or AutoCAD, which then draws all the design elements out of the catalog and really adds a lot of efficiencies to the design team within the dealer's back office. That can then be synchronized to the quotation, adding huge amounts of efficiency to the process.
And spec sheets and all that sort of
stuff. All of that's attached within the catalog that can be drawn down upon that, yeah.
And coming, or I don't know if it's coming or now, is carbon data or
so, yeah, kind of stuff, we're kind of getting ahead of the curve. So obviously carbon data is not a legal requirement, but it's a requirement that the marketplace is asking for. So to the latter part of last year, the last quarter of last year, we introduced carbon reporting into the e-catalog, which would then follow that piece of equipment from the e-catalog into a quote or into a design. But ultimately, it's going to give a value to the end user. So the dealer can then pass that on to the operator. So when the manufacturers had their equipment go through this process, creating a TM65 or however they decide to have it calculated using whatever methodology, we just take that as another data set. So it's from specified point of view, there's no difference to a carbon footprint. From a price point of view, from a kilowatt loading, it's just another data set that we attribute to that piece of equipment and get that data to the people that need it.
Okay. And do you think specifies changed how people design kitchens or not? Or is it a tool to kind of help?
In terms of the actual process of how a chef would operate in the kitchen, probably not.
Okay.
In terms of the efficiencies of getting to the point where the design is down on paper, they've spoken with the client, they've moved some design blocks around as the design changes, as the understanding of the project changes. Yeah, absolutely. We're adding huge amounts of efficiencies, especially when you're kind of linking the different products within the ecosystem together. You know, we've been told, not anecdotally, we've been told by people that use the software, that the entire end-to-end process of creating a project, they can save themselves about 60% of their design time, their project delivery time, using the Specify ecosystem, which is just freeing up huge amounts of time within that design office.
Okay. And where do you see sort of kitchen design itself heading, and we're using these tools and things? Is it that saving time?
It's saving time from a delivery perspective, but then also decarbonisation, as we've already touched upon, you know, getting that into the marketplace, making that as efficient as possible, making that as transparent as possible. You know, we've just built that within to the ecosystem, within the product, and just released it. There's no extra charge for that. It's just something that the marketplace needs. And that decarbonisation will then flow in from the equipment choice, because dealers, designers are able to make a credible choice all in one place, because all of the equipment data is held in one place. They're not having to go from manufacturer to find this data. They're all just stored in one place.
And what countries are you operating in?
So we operate obviously in the UK, in Ireland, which are two regions that I look after. Also the Middle East, the UAE regions, North Africa. Again, I look after those regions. Australia is one of our regions. Asia, right the way across Europe, North America, South America, Canada. So we are a fully global organization, which is, you know, we've got the data held in a cloud because it just means that it's accessible to anybody on the planet on any device, whether you're remote, whether you're in the office. As long as you've got a connection to the internet, you can get into Specify.
And you've got representation in those countries, people to look after the different regions or whatever.
Absolutely. So we've got an office based over in the US, and we've got a team over in the US that look after sales and aftercare. But then our main office on our main support structure is based in Northern Italy, has been for a decade and more. We have our development team there, so our dev team who kind of look after the software. We have the help desk that actually look after our customers out in the field. They're all based in Northern Italy. We chose Northern Italy purposely because it's the heartland of where a lot of the manufacturers for our industry are based. And I guess the European team are looking after those manufacturers as well as the European dealers and distributors and designers that we work with.
Okay. And obviously today we've got Matt, Malcolm, both using the system from different perspectives. And we're going to hear from them, but what is it they're both using it for, really, so, your perspective?
So if we start off with HCE and Matt, they've been designing with specified design for a number of years. And John and I spoke, I guess it must have been about 6-8 months ago, about utilizing and bringing in the quote platform into HCE purely from a connected perspective. So at Specify, we have the ability to API into a dealer's back end, if you like. So we can then connect Specify quote and design to a CRM system and an invoicing system, which kind of ring fences everything, makes the efficiencies from the dealer a lot greater, reduces the amount of input that they have to have. So if they upload a customer into their CRM system, it's automatically going to be within specified quote. They create a quotation, it's going to go flowing straight into their invoicing system. So it adds huge amounts of efficiencies to that dealer.
Okay. Yeah, streamline operations. I guess also less missed invoices or overcharging or undercharging or whatever that looks like.
Yeah, it absolutely reduces down the element of error, mistakes, because everything is fully connected. When we're talking about working with people like Williams, Williams have been a strong advocate of Specify for many, many years, and we've had their equipment, their data, their pricing in Specify for years. I met with Gary, who I know that you've had on the show previously, about 18 months ago at a trade show, and he approached me talking about Specify design. We've got all of Williams's design blocks, but what was missing was cold rooms and the ability to create a bespoke cold room, freezer room within Specify design. So Gary and I threw a few ideas around, and I said, it's got to be easy. This can't be a difficult process to go through. Let me go and speak with the development team. We'll arrange a meeting and we'll kind of throw a few ideas around. Long story short, a lot of work later, 18 months further down the road, we're just about to launch this week a cold room configurator tool within Specify Design, which is going to enable designers, consultants to be able to plot out a cold room, any shape that they want, attach a freezer room, have a dual compartment, cold room, freezer room, all based upon the specific design criterias from Williams, including the panel sizes, the floor recesses, everything that you can think about, including the pipe runs, delivery, installation. So you're going to be able to get a fully costed cold room pushed out of the software. It's going to create a design block in Revit or an AutoCAD, and you're going to be able to visualize it in 3D. Now, it's going to be, we've created this with an idea that it's going to take us 95% of the way there, but there's always going to need to be a little bit of human interaction, which is where the Williams team are going to come in and kind of finalize the job. But what it means to a dealer or a consultant is that you can get a design, a PC sum for that cold room, mm-hmm. and get it out to your customer probably within about 10 or 15 minutes.
And the M&E information, et cetera, like headline stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
For well, confirmation, think, yeah. But 90% there.
90%, correct, yeah. So it's really revolutionising the way that people can get that data in regards to a cold room or a freezer room. You know, and thanks to Williams and the professionalism that, you know, we've been through this entire project over the past 18 months, and there has been ups and there has been downs within the process, but, you know, we've finally landed on the final solution that we went through just yesterday, and, you know, everybody seems really happy with it. And I'm okay. Made up with it, to be fair.
Well, we're going to discuss that a bit more. So, Matt, you're at the sharp end of it, really, as a kitchen house, a shipper tool, however you want to label yourselves. We'll talk about Specify in a minute, but what's the sort of biggest challenges you see when you're installing kitchens? You know, because that's what you're doing every day, and I know it's tough work as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many different challenges. Every project's so different, but the common theme we get is program, I would say. You know, when we're working with different contractors, end users, program is so critical because we have a lot of big ticket items that have a lot of lead times. So it might take 6 to 8 weeks to manufacture. It could take 8 to 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. We need critical dimensions, critical information to manufacture. And if we miss those slots, there is a knock on with program. I think the understanding of that is probably the most difficult to manage. People don't understand why there's such a big lead time with these items, and they ask us to come in and do weird and wonderful things. And it's just understanding that program,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the cause and effect.
And
of
I guess
it.
All the sequence of how things go into a project as well.
Yeah, no, exactly that. There's knock-on effects. If we don't hit key milestones within that program, it has a knock-on effect with manufacturer drawing, production, drawing approvals, tech subs approvals, then the actual installation dates. There's a lot of things that come out of it.
Right, okay. And I guess that's where programs can go wrong, I guess, is really just around that program and sequence piece, really, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say it's the management of the program. I think that's something that we're very good at. You know, we have dedicated project managers for each project that we do, and they'll be doing programs every single week.
Okay.
And they'll review the programs of where we are and highlight to a client saying, look, this is a key milestone. We have to hit this. This is the knock-on effect if we don't, and just manage them through that process. You know, we're here to help. We're here to work alongside them.
Mm.
But people need to understand the knock-on effects if we don't hit those
achieve
milestones.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course. And so with Specify, you've just recently or in the last, I don't know when it is, so adopted it? Or?
We've had Specify on the design side for a long time. So when I talk design side, I'm talking about how we produce our drawings.
Right.
And what our drawings mean are design drawings, they could be service drawings, and that's making, you know, drainage, water, electrical consumptions on those drawings. So they're very critical to what we do.
Yeah, okay.
We are looking to, like Simon said, to integrate our quoting package with the drawing side, and that should speed up our, you know, estimating quoting team.
Yeah, that will link into the design pack.
Exactly that, yeah. And it should, like Simon said, it reduces human error, effectively, and doing the same thing, you know, over and over again. And it should quicken things up and hopefully make us very efficient. That's the intent.
So you're kind of in that process at the moment, or just starting that journey?
Yeah, we're in that process at the minute. We anticipate we'll be there in sort of 3-4 months, and then it's green lights and all go.
Okay. And I know that we had HCE on, like, episode one, but what is HCE for like, the listeners, if you like? Obviously, you install kitchens, but it's more than that, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, so we're a family-run business based in Southampton, and we're called Distributor, Dealer, Project House. All means the same thing.
Yeah.
What we do is we supply, install, design, project manage, and service equipment. This is all done in-house, so we're not reliant on a third partner, which means we have full control on any project that we're involved in. We do any sector. We do education, we can do garden centres, stadia, hospitals, anything, you know, MOD, you name it, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And we'll go nationwide as well. So we've got key contacts all up and down the country. And, we think we're good at what
we do. We've done some pretty prestigious jobs, fair to say.
Yeah, we've done some really prestigious jobs. I think the most prestigious that everyone would know around the world is probably Wimbledon Tennis Courts, the club. We do a lot of work there. They're a very, very big client for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do, some 5-star hotels like the Savoy and the Bulgari Hotel. And then we've done, you know, some really big restaurants. We've just done Simpsons in the Strand, which is opening now. But then we also do international work as well. So we've really added that to our portfolio within the last couple of years, and currently working in the Falkland Islands. We'll go here, there and everywhere.
Well, okay. What are you doing there, can we ask?
it's MOD. That's all I can say. Yeah, yeah. But there's probably about 20 containers that are going over, being shipped over there at different stages. It's an exciting project.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Malcolm Williams. I mean, I think a lot of people know who Williams are worldwide. If not, I say the market leader, really, in refrigeration, really, I think. Is it fair to say?
We like to think so.
I mean, you know, you'll see it wherever you go, be it London, Hong Kong, Bangkok or Australia, you'll see Williams.
That's right, yes.
But what is Williams, for everyone else that might not know?
Right, well, Williams is a manufacturer of refrigerated products with its HQ in King's Lynn in Norfolk.
Mm-hmm.
But also we've got sales offices around the world and manufacturing plants in China and also in Australia.
Okay.
Those manufacturing plants service their local areas. So China is for the Far East subcontinent, and then Australia services Australasia, Pacific Islands, that sort of region. The UK is UK and Europe.
Okay.
But we don't go to the States.
Okay,
because the cost of entry there is
it's quite
high,
significant. So really, Middle East and out into the Far East and Australasia is the kind of
right.
Yeah, which is why I've seen it with places I've been travelling. I think so. You're part of the AFE group.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what? And then also the Alley Group.
Yes, part of like a couple of groups.
Yeah.
The one for the UK is we've got Falcon Food Service.
Yeah.
We're a manufacturing business of prime cooking equipment, Mono, which manufactures bakery equipment.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a couple of service businesses, Service Line and Miller's Vanguard. Miller's specialise in supermarket work, and Service Line do sort of preventative maintenance contracts for the food service industry.
Okay. And then obviously Alley Group.
And then Alley Group.
Most people on the podcast should know Alley Group.
Most people will know Alley Group. Yes. Huge business.
And they were our big sponsor last year. So
Indeed, yes.
We covered that in depth.
Yes.
So, yeah, the world's largest manufacturer of food service equipment. From your perspective, you're working with Specify, and you know, why is it important? And also, like, why is refrigeration? I mean, it's a stupid question, I know, but why is refrigeration important?
Okay, I'll deal with the first part.
Yeah.
Okay, Specify. I've been a big fan of Specify over many years, and the reason is it's not just a nice bunch of people to do business with, but it's a way of getting our products, whatever it might be, onto consultants, end users, distributors, drawings.
Yeah.
And it's a simple way of doing it. And on the back of it, every model of ours, so let's take an upright fridge, we have what we call a seven-dimensional symbol that goes onto the drawing. That symbol, as Simon has referred to, can be a CAD, 3D, can be Revit. And then what sits behind that is all of the detail, the specification, the data sheets, et cetera, manuals, right, et cetera. So whoever needs it can access it through that one symbol. So okay, from a manufacturer, not just us, mm-hmm, but all manufacturers that are on the platform
have all of that data,
or they upload all of that data, and then that's managed by Specify. So
a design consultant or M&E consultant, yep, or whatever.
You can just go on and go onto the drawing and click, and then all that detail then comes down. And we've just added on, you spoke earlier with Simon about TM65, embodied carbon.
Yep.
That's very important at the moment, and all manufacturers are looking at that. And mm-hmm, some are further down the line than others. We chose to get involved with this because projects in London are now asking for this, and it's a must-do. So our products, our cabinets are all TM65, mid-level, calculated,
okay,
and have been verified by SIBSE, who are the drivers of the calculation. Of
that. And that is about the carbon during the manufacturing process,
yes,
to the point before it gets delivered to the,
yes,
user.
That's correct, yeah. Right, it's okay, the embodied carbon.
Right.
I mean, it probably in years to come, it will be a line on a data sheet with your calculation.
Okay,
but right at the moment, we're having to provide more and more detail. And it probably will evolve as well to carbon footprint. And then we've got where we've all got to be on the platform at various. I think Combis are having to go on to for the product passport at the end of this year.
Okay.
And then other equipment will then follow in due course.
Okay.
But coming back to it, we've included our data within our symbol, mm-hmm, so that is all available. So if you take a food service consultant, they can access all of that immediately and make a calculation, not just for refrigeration, but for cooking equipment, dishwashing, fabrication, et cetera,
yeah.
And we just Specify's created all of the design blocks, mm-hmm, the DWGs and the RFAs for all of Williams's equipment. And what we're now doing is adding that carbon data into the design block as well. So when a designer or a consultant drops it into a CAD design or a Revit design, that data about the carbon will follow it into the technical schedule automatically and create a calculation per area within that design or for a total design as well. So all of that data is going to flow through the entire software.
Cool. And for a dealer like us, that is so critical. Because mm-hmm, we get asked this information up front and we need it very, very quickly. So to know where it is and how we can get it is a real plus point for Specify.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to, you're all here anyway, chipping in, which is fantastic, actively involved. And we're going to get into a bit of a group discussion about these subjects and wider kitchen design and a few fun questions, if that's okay.
Still thinking of Specify as just design and quoting software? Specify isn't just a software platform. It's your digital partner in the food service industry. We support manufacturers, dealers, and consultants with a connected ecosystem of tools that enhance sales, streamline workflows, and improve data accuracy across the entire project lifecycle. What many people remember as a design or quoting system has evolved. Today, Specify brings together cloud-based digital catalogs, pricing, configuration, technical, and sustainability data into one structured environment, reducing manual effort, minimizing errors, and helping ensure projects are specified, quoted, and delivered right the first time. And with Specify's API services, everything connects seamlessly to your ERP, PIM, and e-commerce systems, creating a single source of truth across your organization. Specify, empowering the food service world with the tools to design and deliver amazing hospitality experiences.
So I'm now joined, obviously, by all three gentlemen. We're going to discuss a little bit more about Specify and how they're using it in their businesses. And then we're going to talk about like challenges around kitchen installs, refrigeration, and some of the mistakes and positive things that happen. So, Malcolm, just going back to you, like Specify, why did you embark on this project of building this new configurator, if you like?
Right.
It's a big undertaking.
It is. It is a big undertaking, yes. We're operating in a world of immediacy.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to price a cold room, mm-hmm. for if you take as a food service consultant, I'll just use a consultant in this example. In a lot of cases, a consultant's client will say, we need a budget price within 48 hours.
Yeah.
And that's not unusual to be put under that kind of pressure. Now, a consultant would have to go out to fabricators, dishwasher people, all sorts of sectors within our industry to obtain a price mm-hmm. within 48 hours. And that is very difficult. Now, in Williams's situation, to get a cold room price within 48 hours, that may be something that's a little bit different, it's more bespoke, etc., then we may need a little bit longer to do that.
Yeah.
So therefore, we've missed the deadline.
Yeah.
And maybe our competitors are the same. I don't know. So how can we actually break that? Well, that's the reason why we came up with the configurator, because a consultant or a kitchen contracting house such as HCE can then go on, design the cold room themselves,
yeah.
and obtain a budget price within 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay, so, quite simply.
And what does that do? That does for hopefully does for us is then Williams is thought of as the number one choice because yes. we've come back the quickest yeah. to the consultant, to the dealer, and then we move forward on that project with them.
Yeah, of course.
So that and in it, a
and
nutshell.
And it's kind of highly specialist as well, especially like cold rooms and things, yes. and often big ticket items.
Yes.
If you've got multiple.
Yes. Indeed, yeah. So that's the reason why, and it is in the world in which we live, because you don't get the time anymore. So we've had to react as a business to try and deliver that for our customers.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think, I mean, you're right, and I think that's sort of like since COVID more so, and we keep banging on about that, but deadlines are tighter, everyone's making decisions yep. later.
Yep. Yeah, definitely, we're even down to lead times.
Yeah,
we've just had an order for a quite a prestigious project, and we were actually given 2 weeks lead time.
Wow!
Because the client had left it so long, and gone through the process of awarding the project to a distributor, but not moved the yeah. delivery date.
Yeah.
So that gap had narrowed, and I'm sure Matt will see this as a daily problem.
Just yeah, to clarify, definitely. that isn't one of our projects.
Yeah, I mean you're saying that. I mean, planning permission, is this, you know, this one issue, or is it contractors?
I think it's more. We're in a digital society, and everyone timelines are getting tighter and tighter. It could be there's blockers in terms of planning. It could be there's design changes. There's not design freezes.
Yeah.
And it just comes back to that point I made earlier about program. And as soon as you miss one milestone, you know, you need to stop and really refresh and find out why that's happened and reprogram again, not, you know, kick the can down the road.
Yeah.
Because it does have an impact later on. And ultimately, we're the last trade in on site. And, you know, we've then got to accelerate and get it done, because by that point there's an opening date, there's maybe a soft launch, there's maybe a party that's been organised, and, you know, we want to make it happen for the clients, but it just puts a lot of pressure on what we do.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not going to get into politics on the podcast, but just, you know, generally in a wider context, geopolitics, what's happening in the world, I guess this also affects confidence.
Massively. I mean, you know, you look at the America situation and the tariffs that went on.
Yeah.
You know, no one knew what was going to happen in terms of pricing, in terms of lead times. And they are all decision makers in the process for how we specify equipment or how we procure equipment. You know, some of these might have to be ordered 6 months in advance to make sure we actually get the equipment in time.
But no one can forecast the pricing change.
But no one
can, it could jump 10, 20%.
No, exactly that. And a lot of our contracts that we're on are fixed-term pricing, you know, and
so fixed-term
contracts. There's a lot of risk. And, you know, we want to minimise our risk as much as possible, not just for us, but for the manufacturers and for ultimately the end client.
Yeah, of course. And Simon, it's fair to say that Specify have enjoyed quite a bounce in the last sort of 3-4 years.
Yep, absolutely.
In user uptake.
Yeah, it's been an incredible 24 months, to be honest with you, since I've been with Specify. There was always that chicken and egg question that was proposed to me, that, you know, manufacturers, dealers, manufacturers.
Yeah, what
without
comes
one,
first?
You haven't got the other. Without the other, you haven't got one. I think that question is far behind us now. We have populated the ecosystem with more and more dealers, more and more manufacturers, more and more actual products. And as Matt alluded to a moment ago, you know, we are now living in a digital world. And I think the food service industry for the longest time has been a very much an analog beast. You know, it's enormous, but the speed that it moves at has been really slow because, you know, you're relying upon manufacturers and designers to kind of get that data from whatever sources. So I guess it was about 24 months ago, Specify changed from being a desktop application to being a cloud-based application, which just means that whenever anybody signs into Specify in the morning, when they get into their office, they click on the Specify tab, they're getting the most up-to-date manufacturer data that is available because it's just being drawn out of the cloud. So if one of our content team has changed a manufacturer's list prices the night before, there's no updates needed. It's just automatically updated within that dealer's world.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really making life a lot easier.
Okay. So in, like, in terms of like design ability and using it for a design tool and the sort of content behind it, what's the benefit there and what is that?
Yeah. So yeah, Specify is not just a provider of the software solution for the marketplace. We're also working with manufacturers to create their content in the first instance. So we have a content lab, as we call it, within Specify, where we will take a look at an equipment portfolio from any supplier. And we're almost making their digital twin. So if you,
so when you say content, you mean like the individual products?
The individual products. So if you look at a manufacturer's product lineup, they might have, what in Malcolm's world, a whole load of different types of counter refrigeration, upright refrigeration. They've got physical products. They then also make an analog version and create a brochure, a printed brochure that they can then pass out to their clients, their customers. We then create a digital twin of that piece of equipment and then hold it to get all together within our cloud.
Like a CAD file, a Revit
file. All of the CAD files, all of the Revit files. We pull everything together into one place. So we're actually creating a lot of the design blocks for the industry. So when you're pairing those design blocks with our products within our ecosystem, it's creating a fully configurable product that can be dropped in. So you can take, for example, a combi oven. You might have an extraction hood, the oven, stacking kit, the second oven, and a stand. That's a configurable product that within Specify, you don't need to know the product codes. You don't need to know great details about how to stack a product because everything's just configured logically within the e-catalog. So you can choose the hood, choose the oven, and it just follows a nice simple flow. And it's the same with all different manufacturers.
Okay, and so you're making that for quite a lot of manufacturers?
Correct, yes. We make it for, I don't know the exact numbers, but a large majority of the suppliers that we have within Specify have been through that content lab process where we've created all of their design blocks. What we do within the renewal of working with that manufacturer for the second year is we then charge them a renewal fee to have their products in Specify, but we also maintain that data, maintain those design blocks. So as Revit and AutoCAD as Autodesk move their products forward and release version 2026, 2027, we make sure that those design blocks, Revit's and AutoCAD design blocks, stay in step with Autodesk, so that the manufacturer then doesn't have to repeat the process of having the design blocks recreated 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years down the line. We just make sure that those design blocks keep step with their design principles.
Quite a bit of work.
Yeah, exactly. there is a lot that sits behind it, and a lot that people don't realise what we're doing until we explain it to them, which is part and parcel of the consultation process that I would go through with a new manufacturer that looks to join Specify. They might just think that we are putting their data out to the world. That's only one part of it. The other part
of it is you're holding quite a lot of intellectual property, really.
Yep.
How do you secure that?
We've got secure clouds. We obviously sign a lot of NDAs. It's important that manufacturers can trust us. And, you know, there's a lot of security that sits behind it. So that data doesn't get into the wrong hands, doesn't get into people's that they don't want it to, which, again, sets us aside from other suppliers in the marketplace. So we have to go through, when a new user, a new dealer, or a new consultant joins Specify and they want access to a manufacturer's library, they have to request it. That gives multiple layers of protection, not only to the manufacturer, but also to the distributor or the consultant involved. It just means that the manufacturer doesn't have to give away their data, their pricing, to people that they don't want to. So, you know, competitor in the market.
Or not an approved partner or whatever.
Not an approved partner as well. Yeah. And then from a distributor's point of view, when they're uploading their discount structure into Specify and their margin expectations for their products that they're going to sell to an end user, that's not our business. You know, that's up to the dealer to put into Specify themselves. That's their commercial data. Why would any manufacturer or any dealer want to share that commercial data with a software provider? That's their information, it's not us. So we work from an authorization process.
Okay. So there's quite a lot to Specify. It's not just a quoting platform. Exactly. It's not just a kitchen design. There's a whole sort of myriad of things. If people want to find out some more about Specify,
just need
website,
to get in contact with me. Reach out. You know, I'm all over LinkedIn. Most people know me anyway. Or you can get onto our website. You can download a trial version of any of our software. We've not even talked about Sketch. We've got Sketch Tool, which is an intermediate design tool that's kind of sits in between drawing something on a piece of paper when you're in the kitchen with the operator to an actual full CAD design. There's Specify Sketch, which is, I guess, made for people like myself who have no understanding of Revit, no understanding of AutoCAD, but need to be able to create an impression and mock something up really quickly and easily, put it into a 3D model so, you know, the operator can visualize it. You can do this on an iPad in the kitchen with the operator. You can then create a 2D floor plan, a 3D floor plan. You can put it onto a PDF, and you can also create a bill of materials. So you've almost locked in that customer before you've left the premise. You don't even need to get the designers involved at this stage.
Yeah.
That is also syncable to our quote platform. So you can produce a quotation, a fully costed quotation for the operator before you've even left that first consultation. The next stage of Specify sketches, we're going to have output that would then link in with Revit or AutoCAD. So you can take a sketch, a basic sketch that any salesperson can create in 20 minutes and then give it to a designer, and they can almost transport it into a Revit or an AutoCAD file.
It's almost like taking it from a concept and moving it into a detailed design.
Exactly.
And a technical design there on.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good.
Again, simplifying the process. It's all about enabling people to sell product easier.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to move on and talk about that, the wider industry, if that's all right. I mean, Matt, from your perspective, what frustrates you most about our sector? I know it's I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just.
I think what frustrates me the most is the lack of support from manufacturers. Not all manufacturers. Don't get me wrong. So I think understanding what part the distributor plays in terms of the process. We're under certain type of contracts, and we've got certain clauses that we have to fill. And a lot of the time, we've got to, you know, if something goes down or needs repair, we sign up to 48 hours. We expect that from our manufacturers, who also are signed up with us for 48 hours, but that isn't always the case of them getting out to site. And they might go to site, say there's a problem with it, go away, and they need to then get that part. And it just elongates that process for the end user. And that causes a bit of friction, causes a bit of frustration. And it's just, yeah, the lack of understanding of how critical a piece of equipment can be to an establishment, I think, is the most frustrating thing yeah. for me.
Cue. Yeah, there were, we went embarked on a project probably about 2 years ago now, and it was headed up making it easier to do business with us. Right. And that is one area, as Matt's just raised, is reaction times to warranty service. Mm-hmm. And dare I say it, like the Coldrum configurator,
yeah.
you know, chasing us for pricing, etc. Because we know the pressures that they are under, and also consultants are under. And as I say, we're living in a very fast-paced world at the moment. And you mentioned about service. And I think that's a good subject, because I don't know a service company that can get it right all of the time, because the customer has got a product that isn't working. It can be any product. And all they want it to do
is work
and work very quickly. And so it's all about how quickly you can get out. Now, we work on the basis that once we get the inquiry, once we get the call, that we will phone site to try and understand firsthand exactly what has gone wrong with the appliance. And that may give us some indication as to which spare part we will need to take with us to service that call. Don't get it right all the time, but it gives us an indication. So when we arrive on site, then hopefully we can get that appliance up and running. But it is all about for everybody making it easy to do business, and that's our aim.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it from a specify point of view, when we're kind of taking a few steps back, so we are well before the operator gets their hands on the pieces of equipment. We're in the design process, we're in the quote process. So again, we're living in a fast-paced world, even in the world of design. Designers need to get their designs out to in front of the customer. So if they've got an issue, or they've got a problem that they find whilst they're using our software, you know, because you've got to think about understanding Revit, understanding AutoCAD. That's a principle in itself. Then you've got to understand how to use specified design. We have a team of designers and people that sit within a help desk based in Northern Europe. So they're only a 1 hour time difference, that are easily contactable. You can get hold of them via email, via Teams. We have Specify Connect, where one of our design team, one of our help desk team can remote onto your laptop, take control, obviously all securely with your authorization, take control of your mouse, sort out your issue and get you up and running. We try to do this. People will try, the help desk team try to get back to somebody within an hour.
Okay.
And we always try and close down any ticket on that same day so things don't bubble over to the next day, because we understand from a designer's point of view or from an estimator's point of view, they've got a quote to get out. They've got a design to get out. They can't wait 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, longer in some instances that I've heard in the industry, where people are just waiting for a callback or they're waiting for their ticket to be raised. It's not acceptable. So people need to be moved on quickly. So we offer that support globally.
That's pretty impressive, really. I think, do you think kitchens, like all of you, think kitchens are over-designed or not?
I don't think they're over-designed. I think products are getting over-designed.
Okay, some products too technical.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of them are great, and some have been developed with some really good gadgets and some really good tools, which I can see. But there's some which have been added on, which I think, is it necessary for the chef or the caterer that's going to be using this piece of equipment? And again, it's just another bit of kit that could fall down. You know, there might be a fault on it. So I think, not necessarily the kitchen's over-designed, but maybe some equipment.
And I agree, because I'm seeing some of this with like things like dishwashing and things like that, where there's high turnover of staff.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking, wow, I can't even understand this machine. So you know, it's easy, one button, on, off, done.
Yeah.
It's washing dishes.
I think we need to go back to more simple. Keep it simple, you know.
And Malcolm, do you think?
Yeah, I would agree to a point on that. We've been asked by our controller manufacturers if we'd like these all singing, all dancing controllers, specifically for our blast chillers. And a lot of our customers are saying, keep it simple. You know, sometimes English isn't the first language. We, especially here in London, you know, we've got people from all over the world that are operating our equipment. So blast chillers, we've kept very simple with 1, 2, 3 buttons, and then it goes through its program.
Yeah,
we wish to retain that. We've also just launched some upright cabinets and counters that are multi-temperature.
Yeah, I saw that in Milan.
So this is an industry first whereby you can store anything from general produce, whether it be cheese, you can store chocolate, you can then ice cream, and then go all the way up to frozen, full frozen. So it's down to the customer. If their menu changes, they can adapt that upright fridge or
that's fantastic. It stops the problem of we've ordered a fridge but we've got a freezer.
Yes. Yeah, indeed.
And that happens a lot.
It does. Or maybe, you know, the cold room or freezer room goes down.
Yeah, and then you switch on into freezer.
You know, so they don't lose stock, then they can move that frozen product into maybe what was operating as a fridge can then be transferred to operating as a freezer and you don't lose your stock.
That's gonna help with space, isn't it? In that kitchen.
Indeed,
It's getting tighter and tighter.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic initiative. And to be honest, why not? It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yes.
Really. And for the operator, they're going to love that. So we're going to move on to a bit of a just fun, quick fire round, if that's all right. So just give me a reasonably quick answer to each question, if that's okay. Simon, your worst habit?
Probably not checking in on people regularly enough.
Okay. Matt?
It's got to be my fussy eating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes. You're right.
For me, trying to do things too quickly.
Okay, fair enough. Malcolm Batchelor again. Beer, wine, whiskey, gin?
Beer for me, real ale.
Cool, nice.
Yeah, beer, lager.
It's quite simple for me. Don't limit yourself. All. Everything.
Get in there.
Not moderation. Just get in it.
Early bird or late owl?
Night owl, for sure.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Early bird. Used to be a late owl, early bird now.
Yeah, I'm same, early.
Yeah, early, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. I'll be bed by nine. Supper five, winding one up. Everyone's getting, you know. Best city in the world?
Bangkok, without a doubt.
Wow, okay.
I love London.
Okay,
I love good. London.
London, closely followed by Rome.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Wow, okay. I mean, I'd have said New York, but I've just come back from Bangkok and it's wow, fantastic. What a city. What a
place. Yeah, New York's nice.
One word to describe our industry.
Fast paced.
Okay.
I was going to say chaos.
No, don't say that.
Exciting.
Okay.
Friendly.
Yes.
Yeah, I
like that.
I agree with that.
Fast paced. I don't think you said that like 5 years ago, maybe.
No, again, I think it's been a recurring theme for what we've all said is that the world waits for nobody.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not submitting your quote, if you're not submitting your design, somebody else is.
Mm.
So you've got to get out there and get it done quickly. Mm. Something goes down, you've got to fix it quickly. It's a fast-paced industry, so you've got to move quickly.
And Matt, why do you think it's exciting?
Because there's always new challenges, there's always new prospects. And again, touching on the fast-paced environment, there's always new initiatives going on.
Yeah.
So it's never the same. It's always developing and it's always good to keep learning. So that's why I find it exciting.
Definitely. I think it's also like an industry that a lot of people historically might not have heard of. We're like a sub industry. People don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of equipment, you know, what do you know? But I think now our prominence is becoming louder to be.
When you think people don't know or haven't heard of the industry.
Yeah,
the people in our industry feed this entire planet, the population of the world, every single day.
Yeah,
that's how critical we are to the world.
Definitely, definitely.
People don't realise it.
Yeah. I think you said friendly.
I did indeed. Yeah, when you look at the hospitality industry, it's massive.
Mm.
When you sort of narrow it down to our bit, and you know that they're suggesting that the turnover of our section is around about £1 billion. But the people that are in it is actually quite small. When you go along to a number of conferences, whether it's CEDA, FEA, even some of the public sector events, everybody's friendly. Everyone gets on with each other. Even rival manufacturers.
Yeah, definitely.
Rival distributors. Yeah. Everybody gets on. Okay, you don't give away trade secrets and what have you, but you get on. And I've just found it a very friendly industry.
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's also about your attitude as well, isn't it? I guess how you approach it.
Yeah.
There's some unfriendly people out there, not many. I'm not going to say who. So, just to wrap us up at the end of the podcast, Matt, the sort of future of our sector, where do you see us? Like 5 years, 10 years? I mean, AI?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, at the minute, I think hospitality is, you know, it's taken a bit of a hit with what's going on in politics. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it'll always be needed, and I think it always seems to rally around again, yeah, which adapt. Is the encouraging thing. I think there's going to be initiatives that come in. AI is going to be a big tool, especially front of house, I think. It's going to be very interesting to see how that develops. But yeah, I think the world's the oyster for hospitality. It's always going to be there. People do like going out. They enjoy spending time with friends, family, colleagues. So yeah, again, exciting, you know. Really looking forward to see what the future holds the next 5-10 years.
Definitely. I think it, from my perspective with AI, it's... Some people are like negative or by using it, or but it's such a powerful tool.
Yeah.
Because even just the other day, we had a problem with sign. I actually used it to try and diagnose and just retest it. And then lo and behold, the engineer said, and I thought, that's what AI told me. I mean, yeah. Not always right. You shouldn't rely on it, but it's obviously clearly very powerful.
It's, yeah, it depends on what information you're pushing into it. But you've obviously put the right information in, and it's giving you correct answers. So
you've got to have some knowledge.
Yeah, it's educating people how to use it, I think, is a big one.
It's a tool, isn't it?
Not a tool. Yeah.
I wonder if doctors are using it.
Yeah, I think AI's got a place in our industry. I think it's got a place in designing and quoting, but I don't think it will replace the human being that sits behind it. As Matt's saying, you know, you need to utilize it, make the best of it, make your life easier. I think that's what it should be doing for our industry. But I think the future is more digitalization, more connectivity, more connection between manufacturers, distributors, to actually be able to deliver projects so much easier.
Yeah, more collaboration.
More collaboration, yeah. And to really push the industry into a digital space.
Yeah. And Malcolm, where do you see it?
Following the same sort of theme, really. Use of technology, whatever that may be. We've spoken about AI. I think manufacturers will use it just as a given for forecasting and manufacturing practices. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at quick service restaurants, look how that's changed. You don't go up to the counter anymore. You order on a board.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see that tech coming through in equipment and kitchens in general, making them faster to deliver meals.
Yeah. I mean, even things like M&S calves now. You go to M&S calf. That shows how old I am. And you have to use the screen. Like my mum, she's 85, bless her. She's panicked. Yeah, but that you wouldn't have seen that before.
No, you would.
Someone like a Zap in the market.
No.
So, okay. Well, that concludes the podcast. I hope that you've all kind of enjoyed it, and it's
yes, been great fun.
Been fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you for joining me. And as we've heard about Specify, we've heard again about Williams and their market leader refrigeration, new product out with the fridge, freezer and cabinets on the counters, and also from HCE, who are actually our first early adopter and supporter of this podcast, which is now reaching over 30,000 people in 62 countries. So thank you, Matt, for having the belief in us and a bit years ago. If you've got any questions, email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.